This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
Well, this is an amazing story. The Italian Navy has recovered a migrant ship which sank in the Mediterranean between Libya and Sicily in April last year with around 800 people on board. No one's really sure how many in total. And that disaster really does remain one of the worst tragedies we've seen in the Mediterranean migrant crisis. Only 28 people survived when this fishing boat capsized around 120 miles south of the Italian island of Lampedusa.
That's reporter Josephine McKenna in Rome. We'll have full details on this story coming up. Also, the new U.S. envoy to Somalia was sworn into office Monday. He is the first American ambassador to that nation in 25 years. Opposition parties and civil society organizations in Malawi are questioning the makeup of the Electoral Commission. And pupils of a local primary school near Nairobi have initiated an innovative environmental program aimed at curbing the effects of climate change. We'll have these stories and more, so stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour, the new U.S. envoy to Somalia, who was sworn into office Monday, is the first American ambassador to that nation in 25 years. He takes up his post as Somalia faces a number of crucial issues, including insecurity, an upcoming election, and the potential closure of the Dadaab refugee camp in Kenya. VOA's Jill Craig asked Somalis living in Kenya how they feel about the new U.S. ambassador.
Monday's installment of Stephen Schwartz as the new ambassador to Somalia was a landmark in U.S.-Somali relations. U.S. Deputy Secretary of State Antony Blinken, who officiated the ceremony, said Somalia has made significant strides in rebuilding its state in the past 3 years.
It's precisely because this moment represents so much possibility, so much potential, that President Obama has chosen as his representative a diplomat of unmatched caliber and a public servant of unrivaled heart.
State collapse is the main reason for the long U.S. diplomatic absence from Somalia. In 1991, the U.S. embassy in Mogadishu closed after Somalia's military regime was overthrown and violence erupted between warring clan militias. In late 1992, President George H.W. Bush deployed U.S. troops to Somalia to support a U.N. aid mission aimed at relieving mass starvation. But 10 months later, 18 American soldiers were killed in Mogadishu by rebels who shot down two U.S. helicopters in the Black Hawk Down incident. The United States withdrew its troops the next year. After 2 decades of war and chaos, it was only in 2012 that Somalia achieved some measure of stability with the creation of an internationally backed government. But security remains a problem as the militant group Al-Shabaab continues to launch attacks in Mogadishu and elsewhere, a situation noted by the new U.S. envoy.
It's time for Somali authorities to establish a responsive and effective Somali National Army to defeat Al-Shabaab and unify the country.
Abdi Dahir Mohamed Sirad, a Somali living in Nairobi, believes security is key for Somalia and wants Schwartz to make it a priority.
I think the United States needs to help with the military, building the Somali national forces, which can actually liberate that country from any group that is actually jeopardizing the peace in that country.
Elections scheduled for August represent a significant undertaking for Somalia, which is why some Somalis wish Schwartz could have been posted sooner.
We wish he came a year before, because right now the elections are just a month away, about two, three months away. And we cannot do much as far as a lot of the logistics is concerned.
Kenya's announcement that it will close the Dadaab refugee camp, whose 300,000 residents are mostly Somalis, will be another issue among many for Schwartz, says Horn of Africa analyst Abdi Wahab Sheikh Abdi Samad.
The hood ahead, it's a very, very complicated one. But if he's smart enough, if it's understand the dynamics of the region, if he understand what they call the Somali, communities, the culture and norms, he can easily overcome all those problems. And I wish him good luck.
U.S. officials expect Schwartz will arrive in Mogadishu by the end of July. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
The Italian Navy has recovered the migrant ship that sank off the coast of Sicily last year with an estimated 800 people aboard. It has been deemed one of the worst known tragedies of the Mediterranean migrant crisis. Only 28 people survived the sinking. Meanwhile, the European Union's Frontex executive director, Fabrice Leggeri, says that around 300,000 migrants currently in Africa could arrive in Italy from Libya over the next year. Reporter Josephine McKenna is following the latest migrant developments. She spoke with me from Rome first about the significance of the recovery of the migrant ship.
Well, this is an amazing story. The Italian Navy has recovered a migrant ship which sank in the Mediterranean between Libya and Sicily in April last year with around 800 people on board. No one's really sure how many in total. And that disaster really does remain one of the worst tragedies we've seen in the Mediterranean migrant crisis. Only 28 people survived when this fishing boat capsized around 120 miles south of the Italian island of Lampedusa. And survivors said there were hundreds still on board. Tragically, many of them were locked in the hold of the ship, which is just so awful to imagine. What's been interesting about this vessel's recovery is the scientific approach that was taken. A specially designed robotic apparatus was used to physically raise this boat to the surface from a depth of 1,200 feet. And forensic experts hope to identify some of the victims, which is probably going to be quite a tall order. The wreck is being towed to a Sicilian port, and it's going to be kept in a particular type of refrigerated container during that journey to ensure that any remains of the victims are protected.
Well, that's quite an amazing feat and really quite an amazing story after a year to be able to recover this ship from depths of over 1,000 feet. So at this point, any reaction from family members yet?
We haven't seen any reaction from family members. Only a handful, as I said, survived. At the time, the bodies of only 24 of the victims were recovered from that disaster, and those victims were laid to rest in Malta. A year on, I'm not actually sure if the survivors are still in Italy, but we're waiting to see if some of them might speak out about this and indeed try and find out if their loved ones are among those bodies that are on board this vessel.
In another development in the migrant situation, the EU's Frontex executive director is saying around 300,000 migrants currently in Africa could arrive in Italy from Libya. Could you expound on that just a little bit for us?
We've had a statement from the Frontex executive director, Fabrice Leggeri, who spoke to the Italian media this week, predicting that around 300,000 migrants currently in Africa could arrive in Italy via Libya in the months to come. According to his estimates, the Frontex estimates, he says there are around 300,000 planning to move from Western Africa through that central Mediterranean route. And he hasn't put a time frame on it. So far this year, we've seen about 64,000 arrivals in Italy. 300,000 certainly sounds enormous. The crossing season, as we know, is in the summer months. That's possibly going to drop off, I imagine, after September. Is he talking about this year, next year? It's not clear. But what he is saying is caution is necessary because there are so many different kinds of forecasts. And yet he says the number of migrants transiting through the Agadez region in Niger is showing around 13,000 people are moving through there per month.
Is Italy doing anything different in anticipation of this huge influx over the next few months?
Well, so far, the Italian government, as we know, is on the front line working with the European Union, the Coast Guard, the Italian Navy. All these vessels are coordinating massive rescue efforts on a daily basis. In the last week, we've seen more than 10,000 migrants rescued just off the coast of Libya. So there is this massive operation underway. The Italian government is about to open additional hotspots, these centres where they process the new arrivals, but it's unclear whether even more action will be taken by the government in the coming months to cater for this influx. I think we'll just have to wait and see how big the numbers are and how many continue to arrive in the coming months.
That was reporter Josephine McKenna. She spoke with me from Rome. Opposition parties and civil society organizations in Malawi are questioning the makeup of the Electoral Commission. President Peter Mutharika appointed the eight commissioners for the board, which critics say is dominated by the sympathizers of the ruling party. They say the move is a deliberate ploy by the ruling Democratic Progressive Party to rig the elections. Vincent Kondowe is a political analyst. He told reporter Lamek Messina there's a need for Malawi to introduce criteria to be used in the appointment of commission members.
The president will be seen to be acting within the framework of the law, but politically, we are not getting the political independence and neutrality of the Electoral Commission. The problem is that, first of all, the law does not provide for wider consultations. But when you look at elections, by their very nature, they're supposed to be broad-based. But when you look at the Parliamentary and Presidential Elections Act, it provides that the president shall appoint members of the commission in consultation with the leaders of political parties represented only in the National Assembly. This is the problem in itself. So it is not only unfair, but also unjust to leave out all other registered political parties and only pick those who are represented in the National Assembly. And maybe to add on to that, you find that we have a president who is appointing people to oversee a process where he himself is also a candidate.
Was the formula used based on maybe a popularity of the party or numbers in parliament?
The law just says each political party represented in the National Assembly should submit names. So we don't know what criteria the political parties, they themselves, they used in submitting those names. The president can only choose from a pool of people who have been submitted by the political parties themselves. So it is up to the political parties to choose people who are professionals.
Okay, but on the composition itself, how different is it from the previous composition of the commissioners?
In terms of the law, there is no difference because the law says that the leaders of political parties must send the names to the president, and the president must choose from among the names which are submitted by the political parties. So legally, there is no problem, but politically, when you look at the characters and the actors who have been nominated into the Electoral Commission, the perception is that they are mostly DPP sympathizers. That's where the issue of perception is more vital. With how people perceive something influence the kind of trust that they have in that particular organization. So the perception is real, and that perception is a political question. It's not a legal question.
Can this appointment be reversed?
I'm not sure whether the law does provide for that. It does not, as a matter of fact. But when you look at the reforms which are taking place, I think this is food for thought, that our electoral law leaves a lot to be desired, and maybe some of the reforms that are forthcoming must include the reforming the presidential and parliamentary elections and the Electoral Commission Act itself.
Okay, so how do you think it should have been done?
I think the whole idea should be bordering on open market principles. That's how it's supposed to be done, ideally. Have open competitive process. People who can exercise and demonstrate professional capabilities, political neutrality, and they should have a proven track record of no partisan political linkages. I think that is what is needed and required. Otherwise, we're going to remain with the same problem of having an incumbent president determining the outcome of an election before the election is done. Hence, you notice that you will not have an election, but you have a selection process.
That's Vincent Kandoe. He is a political analyst. He was speaking with reporter Lamech Messina in Blantyre. You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. At 20 minutes past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. The new U.S. envoy to Somalia was sworn into office Monday. He is the first American ambassador to that nation in 25 years. The Italian Navy has recovered the migrant ship that sank off the coast of Sicily last year with an estimated 800 people aboard. And opposition parties and civil society organizations in Malawi are questioning the makeup of the Electoral Commission. For more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Pupils of a local primary school near the Kenyan capital have initiated an innovative environmental program aimed at curbing the effects of climate change. From Nairobi, Ruben Chama reports.
The youngsters are from Kiserian Primary School, located in a peri-urban area of Kajiado County, some 26 kilometers southwest of Nairobi. They are actively involved in planting trees. They also tend a community tree nursery where hundreds of tree seedlings are grown and shared with the local community. According to Joshua Juki, who heads the school's environment club, the project was set up several years ago by the children themselves.
4 years ago, when I joined this school, when I came, I joined my colleagues. We are around 5 of us, so that we can nurture and protect the environment in our schools. Kajiado County is an island and semi-arid land. We always ensure that we induct the knowledge on the environment to our people. And one of the core values in our school is to nurture and protect the environment. We usually have some set days in a year where our people, all the way from platform, they have to own at least one tree.
Several years on, the project is gaining traction from the local community and has been commended as a practical homegrown solution towards addressing climate change and deforestation. Victoria Akinyi, 13, is a member of the Environment Club. She says the future belongs to the children and that environment is critical to that future.
I love trees because, you know, no one can survive in this world without trees. The trees help us to stop the global warming. They help us to fight global warming, and they also help us to bring rain.
Akinyi says by planting more trees, the children are claiming their future right now. They are securing their future, planting one tree at a time. Another pupil, David Masharia, 13, is an environment enthusiast. He says he joined the Environment Club to help save farmlands from erosion and address the threat of desertification across Africa.
I take part in planting trees because I know that the world needs me to cater for it. I began planting trees when I joined this school in Standard 4. My teacher told me that it is a great honor to take part in this program because this program helps many people, like those who are infected by diseases that need fresh air. We need to cater for them because they are human beings. I'm passionate about this because when I look at trees holding the nest of birds, I feel happy because I know that I'm taking part in something important. I took a step in making my world better.
The initiative brings back memories of a United Nations-backed program dubbed the Great Green Wall, comprising 11 African countries that involved planting trees to stop the Sahara Desert from spreading southwards. The wall is spearheaded by African heads of state and stretches some 7,000 kilometers from Senegal in the west to Djibouti in the east. Among other benefits, planting of trees provides a barrier against strong winds and help to hold moisture in the air and soil, allowing agriculture to flourish. Simple programs like these control soil erosion, enhance biodiversity, and improve countries' resilience to climate change, as Teacher Njuki explains.
I think our curriculum in Kenya has really put a lot of emphasis on environment. For example, I teach social studies in class 7 and class 8. We always encourage our pupils to continue planting as many trees as possible. Even in science, we talk about trees giving out oxygen and human beings taking in oxygen. In Kenya, we have only 8% areas that are covered by the forest. Maybe if each and every pupil in all the primary schools, we can be able to add the coverage of the forest from 8 maybe to around 20 through our children. Each and every time during the rainy season, they can plant at least 2 trees. And if all of us, we can do that all over the world, we can be able to reduce the global warming that is affecting each and every one.
According to the United Nations, two-thirds of Africa is classified as desert or drylands. Climate change has led to prolonged spells of drought, overgrazing, deforestation, and land degradation. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
Burundi's human rights record is under scrutiny at the United Nations Human Rights Council over the objections and anger of that country's government. The council says it is alarmed at the rise in rights violations in Burundi since last year's political crisis. It wants the violations to stop because it fears an ethnic conflict with devastating consequences for all Central Africa. The UN and the government of Burundi have polar opposite views on what is happening in the country a year after President Pierre Nkurunziza was elected to what his critics call an unconstitutional third term. While the government accuses the United Nations of a campaign of distortion, UN High Commissioner for Human Rights Zayed Raad al-Hussein expresses great concern over the terrible reality that is playing out. In a new report submitted to the UN Human Rights Council, Zayed accuses Burundi's government's agents or associated militia of killings, disappearances, and arbitrary arrest. He says he is alarmed at the prospect of an escalation in ethnic violence. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Nick Ivanoff, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss the 18-year-old prison sentence given to former Congolese Vice President Jean-Pierre Bemba by the International Criminal Court for rape and murder in the Central African Republic. Tune in to Straight Talk Africa next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. VOA. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5-minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.